Terminology is, you have to be careful with it. But the idea is, yes, I think most of the population, judging by attitude studies, pretty much supports these attitudes and views. You maybe have to approach them with different terminology, but yes, you can. Take the common thread of left Marxist and anarchist thinking. Working people should control the work environment and the enterprises in which they work. That's an old American view, so common that it was the slogan of the Republican Party under Abraham Lincoln, was the main driving force for the most effective radical movements in American history, Knights of Labor, the populist movement of the late 19th century. I don't think that's very far below the surface. And I think that can be recovered. And that is the lead driving element in the left Marxist anarchist tradition.
Noam Chomsky, I wish we had much more time. I am very grateful for the time you have given. And I know I speak for my audience, both the listeners and the viewers. Yours is a lifetime of commitment to something that a whole new generation is learning they want to commit to. And I want on their behalf and for myself to thank you for all that you have done, including being with us today. And I wish you the very best long life in the year ahead.
Thank you.
Take care. This is Richard Wolff for Democracy at Work. Thank you for your attention, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
The previous program was Economic Update with Richard Wolff, heard right after the WBAI Evening News, Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. 7 p.m. is Off the Hook. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. It's just about 7 o'clock. This reminder, coronavirus vaccines are available statewide, in fact, nationwide. And you can check locally to see if you're eligible by going to nyc.gov/vaccine finder or by calling 877-VAX4NYC, VAX4NYC. It's, again, 7 o'clock, time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm here.
And in Skype land, who do I see out there? I see Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
I see Gila.
Hello.
I see Alex.
Good evening.
I don't see anybody else. That's it, right? Okay. Welcome, everybody. Welcome. Welcome back. It's our first show of 2021, if you can believe that.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, indeed. Happy New Year. We weren't on last week. And guess what? We're not going to be on next week because it's Inauguration Day, for those of you who believe in inaugurations. And we'll get to that. I guess we'll just jump right in. Well, it's a good thing we weren't on last week because I think there just would have been a lot of us kind of staring at the TV set with open mouths and not being able to really articulate what was happening. But, oh, my God, I mean, it's still kind of, look, Alex is gone. He left. He couldn't even deal with it. Wow. 1 minute into the show and he's gone. Oh, you're back. Okay, good. Go ahead.
The whole picture of what was going on was not clear at the time either. So there was a lot of disparate stories and idea of it. One report likened it from the journalists on the ground to watching something through a straw. Like, we got a very tiny picture of it. Like, just,
well, I don't do that often, but wow, okay.
Just a very, like, limited field of vision.
Mm-hmm.
But in the days after, a much wider picture has sort of come into focus, and that there's a bit of a delay. I think a lot of people, it's taken time for them to process and read up on what occurred.
A better analogy, if you're looking for intelligent life in space and you're just exploring a small part of the sky and you never find that intelligent life because you're not looking in enough places, gosh, I hope we have a better look at what actually happened than that in the next few days or weeks. I think we know a lot more than we did a week ago, such as how much this was being planned. It was being planned online in the open for weeks now with social media networks like Parler and places like that. Of course, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about the insurrection, the attempted coup that took place 1 week ago, January 6, 2021, in Washington, D.C. Anyone who says they were shocked or surprised by what happened either was in a coma or was in denial, one of those two things you were in, because Trump had been basically advertising January 6th as the day to come to Washington, D.C. and take back your country. And a lot of people took him up on that. It was 100% Trump. There is just no other way of interpreting this. Now, he's recently, in the last half hour, given a statement where he's basically trying to say that this isn't what we're about. This isn't about violence or vandalism or storming the Capitol or any of those things that I pretty much gave a wink to you to go ahead and do. No, that's not who we are. Let's be peaceful. And by the way, this is just as bad as Twitter taking away my account. You know, he almost had me up until that point. When he equates losing access because he's a dumbass, then you realize how insincere he actually is. But this whole thing had been out there for many, many weeks. Here's an example. There's an interaction a few days before on a site called the Donald. It's a website that was formed after Reddit banned the subreddit of the same name. They promised violence against lawmakers, police, and journalists if Congress didn't reject the results of the 2020 election. One person asked, "What if Congress ignores the evidence?" And the reply was, "Storm the Capitol." And that received more than 500 upvotes. And another reply, "You're effing right, we do." On pro-Trump social media website Parler, chat app Telegram, and other corners of the far-right internet. I'm not sure it's fair to call Telegram far-right internet. Not even sure how much Telegram can do about something like this. We can get into that later. People discuss the Capitol Hill rally at which Trump spoke as the catalyst for a violent insurrection. They've been using those forums to plan an uprising in plain sight, and they executed it Wednesday afternoon, forcing Congress to flee its chambers as it met to certify the results of the election. The whole world watched that. The whole world saw that unfolding. And when you see something like that, it does not go over well. It does not land. And I have to say, in the end, we the people fought back. And we fought back hard. And we took away some of the toys. Because, hey, guess what? Those aren't the dumbasses running technology. It's the hackers running technology. It's the tech wizards running technology. It's not even the corporations running technology. You know, because they answer to us. And if we rise up in enough numbers and express our outrage enough, they have to listen. Why do you think it took Twitter so damn long to ban this jerk? It was because we finally had enough. And seeing what happened last week, that was enough. They had no choice. Facebook had no choice. Amazon had no choice. They kicked Parler off their cloud. Oh, that "Hey You, Get Off of My Cloud" song would be so perfect right now by the Stones. Oh, wow. I should have thought that. But yeah, they kicked them right off their cloud. And the right wing is screaming censorship. Guys, you understand what censorship is, right? Do I have to explain censorship to Rob? You know it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, censorship is obviously when a private business makes a decision as to who they do or don't want to serve with their business. Like, you know, when a bakery doesn't want to make a gay wedding cake.
Well,
that's
I mean,
totally censorship, right?
It's I don't know why you had to bring that in. That's going to complicate matters. No, look, there's a difference between when the government tells you you cannot speak and say certain things or you will be jailed. That is censorship. If a company says you're not somebody we want to do business with, that's the company's right, you know? And, you know, Alex, maybe you can speak to the gay wedding cake because that just throws a monkey wrench into the whole thing. But I don't know. Does a company have the right to do something like that? Is this the same thing we're talking about?
Well, it's a little bit different, right? I mean, we're talking about the distinction between state action and private action. And is anybody I'm getting a weird echo. Is anybody getting an echo?
No, that's just your voice.
Yeah. Really?
Well, you're all getting an echo.
Well, mm-hmm. We're getting an echo, yes.
Okay, Kyle, please look into the echo. But if you can keep talking. I'm not hearing the echo, and I hope our listeners aren't hearing the echo.
Yeah, I think it. Oh, no, it's still going a little bit. I'm still hearing a faint echo in the back.
Well, we could talk about the echo for the whole hour if you want.
We could, yeah.
Or let's try to make you pretend you're in space or something, and you have to deal with this.
We are in space. Don't forget that. We're all in space, right? So going back to the original point, the distinction really here is about state action versus private action, right? Whereas the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, those are things that apply to the government. So they are prohibitions on actions that the government cannot do. The government cannot abridge free speech. Let's say take the State University of New York at Stony Brook, for example. You know, they would have a hard time, you know, discriminating on viewpoint or on the basis of any kind of speech acts because they are funded by the state. They are funded by the state of New York. The same thing that would apply to the federal government and all of the states. And it was actually only through the process of incorporation that the Bill of Rights actually began to apply to the states. Originally, when our nation was conceived, the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment in particular, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of association, only applied to the federal government. And the states could do whatever the hell they wanted to do. But it was through that process of incorporation in the 14th Amendment that these rights were then applied to the state governments. So it really has to do with governmental action. Twitter is not a platform that's run by the government, thank God, right? And they have the right to determine who is on their platform and who is not on their platform. And they made a determination late in the game, in my opinion, to terminate the account of Donald Trump. And what's scary to me though, about that is in so doing, by Twitter throwing Trump off of this platform, you know, really at the tail end of his presidency, that was an act of political pressure. This was something that was done really as a matter of political expediency, because it became untenable for Twitter at that time to have Donald Trump on his platform any longer. There was just too much clamor. He had crossed a Rubicon from which he could never come back. And that Rubicon apparently was insurrection. I mean, and sedition. That's a pretty goddamn hard line to cross. But just why we have to ask ourselves, why up until that point did Twitter do almost nothing until the election? After the election, they started flagging and tagging some of his posts that they may not be true, or they may not contain accurate information. But up until that point, and there was a New York Times article about this last week, or actually maybe just a couple of days ago, I can't exactly recall. But they made the really good point. If you look at the history of Twitter and the history of Donald Trump, there was a direct crossover. And Twitter started to really take off when Donald Trump was a reality television star. And they loved Donald Trump because he was inflammatory. He said crazy things that people liked. He caused conflict. And because of that, he was a celebrity, one of these blue check celebrities on their platform. Mm-hmm. Twitter itself recommended millions of people to follow Donald Trump. And literally up until the insurrection of 1 week ago, Twitter and these platforms have been profiting from the conflict that he has created. And these platforms love conflict because they love eyeballs. They want eyeballs, and they want engagement on their platforms as much as possible. So Donald Trump and his presidency had to have been a boon for Twitter. And we have to remember, even though it was an act of political power for Twitter to shut down Donald Trump, they are not serving the American people. This is a private corporation. The reason why they can terminate Donald Trump is because they are a private corporation. And because they are a private corporation, they are not accountable to the American people. They are accountable to their shareholders. And up until last week, it was a great thing for the shareholders of Twitter to have Donald Trump on that platform. Yeah,
but Alex, isn't it also somewhat on the shareholders to reflect what the people want? Because I think is the outrage of the people that led to them finally caving and saying, okay, we've had enough of this. Yeah, I agree. It was great for them before the controversy, all the back and forth. And I'm not saying that's even a bad thing. It's terrible, the things he was saying, but having the back and forth and having the engagement can be good. But when it turns into calls for violence, when it turns into blatant lying and getting people to believe in conspiracy theories, that's when you've crossed a line. Now, what they started putting the notices saying that this tweet is not true, or it's basically spreading false information. But then it got to the point after the insurrection that it was clear any further allowing of this sort of thing would lead to more violence. And I don't know what the stockholders were saying, but the people were outraged, and they were certainly saying, Twitter, you got to get your ass in gear here. So are you saying the people don't have that kind of an effect, or does it have to be the stockholders or shareholders, whatever they're called?
I think that it was very clear that there was a tipping point last week where the people of this country no longer felt that it was good for Donald Trump to be in that position and having 88 million followers or something like that, right? I mean, this massive megaphone from which he can and spew misinformation and stir up divisiveness throughout the country, leading to what amounted to not a riot, but a deliberate assault on the Capitol is what really is coming out these days in terms of the intelligence and the planning that we're seeing. And all of that seems to have been born out of Donald Trump's statements. I think we all agree on that. And so that was really the tipping point. But up until then, I don't think that the American people, really had much sway. We had talked about it many, many times on this show in particular about the various instances of Donald Trump violating the terms of service, the terms of use, and abusing the Twitter platform over and over and over again. And if Emmanuel, if you had done that, if Rob T. Firefly had done that, if Gila had done that, engaged in anything, we'd have our accounts banned a hell of a long time ago. But they kept him on this platform. They persisted in having him on up into the point of an insurrection an attack on the Capitol. And I think that that is something that we need to grapple with, because at that point now throwing him off of Twitter, right now, this is has also become a big point of contention for these right wing extremists. It's become a rallying cry. It's become documented empirical evidence that big tech is against the right wing, is against conservatives and is discriminating against them. Even though, look, they do have the right to discriminate. It's certainly, as you mentioned, Emmanuel, not in their best interest to discriminate, because they like to have this dialect, this back and forth discussion. But we all know that that's not what Twitter has really become. It has become the cesspool of divisiveness, an echo chamber of misinformation. Even though it may have grand designs about, you know, allowing people to interact with everyone else around, I don't really care. What it's become to me is a platform that is ill-suited for governmental use. Donald Trump has normalized the use of Twitter, of tweets, for diplomatic relations. This is insane to me. And now you have all of these world leaders and all of these politicians constantly using Twitter to push out official communications of the U.S. government.
Well, hold on a second. You can't say Donald Trump's the only one that does that. All government, no, even the Pope sends things out by Twitter. You know, it's.
Yeah. I would say the abuse of people on the platform, but also the abuse of the platform for official business is probably a valid point that people are going to look back at, because the way he was using the platform for official business as a crutch for actually doing the business of being a president. I think if you look at the way the Obama administration used social media versus the way Trump has dominated on that platform, I think you could definitely and then did a comparison between that and like official press briefings or other forms of political communication that are more attuned to the office. There may be some kind of reflection due, because just the habit, the constant habit, conditioning staffers and reporters to consume and be a follower, literally a follower of the president, just because that's all you had to. And so those points, absolutely, I think will be something we look back at with real shame, I think, and sadness that we didn't see it. And that's, I think, how this mob and this rally occurred. He knew the strength that he could whip up because he'd been on the road doing that. Mm-hmm. And the craziness of allowing a political rally, a campaign event, essentially, during the certification of ballots.
But it's not a campaign event. He lost.
Exactly. But it was essentially a political event to air political grievances and then ultimately turn it into violent action. So I just feel like he conditioned a lot of people within his administration to think like, oh, it's just another one of those political rallies we've been doing. Psych.
Yeah, outside the White House.
Rush the Capitol. Yeah. So those are all aspects of this.
There's abuse on so many levels. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, and we're still trying to get used to this media environment we have now with social media. And like past presidents have had all their ways of getting information out to the public. None of them were so direct as something like Twitter, which is mixing the official business and the official government announcements, which need to be made available to the public, with just whatever randomness farts out of his brain. So many people on the net now, like, have their separate personal and business accounts if they're running their business. And, one has its own voice, the other has its own voice. But, like, imagine some president of the past putting all their communications through one commercial enterprise, one commercial for-profit television station, one commercial newspaper, and everyone else had to pay attention to it through that. And that's the position in which Twitter found themselves. And it could be great for their numbers, but it also maybe it grinds on some sort of flicker of a sense of social responsibility that the people in control of it have every so often. And it ended up actually, you know, backfiring.
Well, I think there's no question that Twitter has too much power, that Facebook, Google have too much power. I think we'd be better served with a whole bunch of companies. But I certainly don't want the government taking over and dictating things, because look at the government we've had, and I certainly would not trust them to do any of that. I do think that if you had a whole bunch of smaller companies, they'd all pretty much reach the same conclusions for the same reasons. One other entity that we haven't really focused upon are the employees, the engineers, the people that make these companies go. When they get pissed off, things stop. Things stop working. And I think you saw a situation at all these companies where people who work there just had it and weren't going to take any more. So regardless of what the shareholders were saying, I think they would have shut it down one way or another. I just think there's a point. And when people are storming the Capitol and threatening to assassinate people that are in the Capitol, I think that's the point where you start reassessing. Alex? Alex, you there? You're muted. Yeah, if you're talking.
I'm okay. Here. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes, we hear you fine. There's no echo. You're fine.
Oh, all right. Yeah, it's curious because I'm having some Wi-Fi issues here. You were going in and out on me there. But, you know, look, I don't disagree. And I think that was also...
Okay, well, now you're frozen.
The engineer.
You froze for a second there. You want to reboot maybe or something? Yeah, you're totally frozen. This doesn't usually happen. Usually we have...
No, I should be back.
Are you back? Okay. This never happened to you before. And you're frozen again.
This is so unlike Alex.
It's like watching The Daily Show where people freeze. We don't freeze here on BAI.
A lot of people have had that feeling in the last week.
Okay, well, just, listen, while Alex is thawing himself out, what I'd like to do is play an excerpt, because there are so many things that have been posted online in this past week, and some things are better than other things. This, I think, is one of the best things ever, and I would like people to take a listen to that. I'm sorry. Sorry for that horrible noise. That's our board on our end. Please, if you're in New York City, I want you to turn your speakers up. I want this voice to resonate. I want this voice to be heard in the streets, because what they have to say needs to be heard.
I hope you're fucking happy inside, you fucking little piss pants pieces of shit. Oh, we're going to storm the Capitol. Let's storm the Capitol. We're patriots. You're a fucking coward. Patriots. Jesus Christ. Fucking idiots that I played high school football with wearing a goddamn American flag bandana talking about, we got to get up there and storm. We got to take our country back. From what? From fucking what? What are you so goddamn upset about? What has anyone ever done to you? You fucking entitled piece of shit. Don't you ever fucking call me one again. Don't you ever say, Corey, you fucking snowflake. You're a liberal. That means that y'all look. What? Want some people to not be sick every now and then? Is this the thing that you can't fucking stand? So you've got to get in your goddamn fucking piece of Ford F-150 you got from your dad, drive it to D.C. and pitch a fucking fit? Is that what it is? Is it health care? Is it still with the fucking guns? Is that what is it? You said Obama was taking them. 8 fucking years ago you said that. Nothing. What is it that this country hasn't fucking given you? You literally got escorted out of the Capitol building aside from the ones that they had to fucking shoot. Is that what it takes? Did you just want to be a fucking martyr? God, you're so fucking pathetic. Do you not ever just sit there and think, my kids are going to see this. My grandkids are going to see this. They're going to put it in the textbook, and you're going to look like the dumbest motherfucker in the world. Nobody will give a shit about Watergate. Nobody. That is fucking... Dude, I'm out of breath from how stupid y'all are. What is it that this country doesn't give you that you think you have to do some bullshit like this? But when you see a fucking black person actually get shot, no gun in their hands, nothing. Oh, they should just comply. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. What is your goddamn problem? Quit giving... Just quit embarrassing me, man. I want my fucking country back. How about that? God damn it. Fuck y'all, you fucking cowards.
Oh, my God. That is the most amazing thing that I think I've heard in a long time. That is a gentleman named Corey Forrester, a comedian. But in that instance, he is extremely serious and right on the money. And I want to request people never make fun of the accent again. Never do that, because you cannot judge somebody by an accent. Judge them by their words. And in this case, the words were something that I think we can all identify with. And I'll tell you something. You know, we've been, Kyle and I have been to the Deep South so many times and the Midwest and all over the country. And it takes a lot for people to be able to express themselves in a progressive manner in places like that. So those kind of words, they mean a lot more coming from some backwoods small town than they do from New York City. And, you know, of course they matter both ways, but think about what people are overcoming, and it resonates so much more for me.
And hearing it from other sides of the country, other places, you don't hear it. Hearing it in a voice that is unfamiliar, but this is a dialect, this is a language that I think people from those areas can really relate to, or they know. They're familiar. They know what he's saying in ways that don't sound quite maybe as pretentious or something from someone who isn't in the area or speaking with that dialect.
And I'm sorry about all the beeps, but this is FM radio, and the FCC does hold the rule book. But you can find it on Twitter pretty easily, and. Hopefully a lot of people hear those words and hear similar words. Alex, are you back? You figured out your technical issues?
Yeah, I did. I apologize for that. I lost internet connectivity and reconnected back into the conversation about halfway through that. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
didn't hear the intro. You just heard
that's
brilliant.
A bunch of expletives being beeped out. Uh-huh. And but, you know, I think the speaker really hints at a really interesting point here, too, because hint is the wrong word. I mean, he gets, you know, right at it. You know, what the hell is it?
Yeah, it's pretty
that
direct.
You're protesting? What are you going and riding against? And I think the answer to that, though, is a lot scarier than we all really want to acknowledge. And again, it goes back to these platforms. It goes back to Facebook. It goes back to Twitter and the misinformation, disinformation, and quite frankly, the radicalization campaigns that have been going on for quite some time. The mushing around and sticking fingers into the gray matters of our brains and twisting and turning and poking and prodding, you know, with our psychologies that has been going on for many years on these platforms. And these people that stormed the Capitol did so not because they thought that Joe Biden was going to take away their guns, like he mentioned the speaker had mentioned, you know, Obama didn't do that 8 years ago. Right? They really believed that this was some kind of 1776 moment. They didn't believe what they were doing was insurrection or sedition or terrorism. They believed that what they were doing was right, that showing up was right, that planning and plotting this and taking over the Capitol and stopping the quote unquote steal of the vote was right. Mm-hmm. And not only right, but it was the righteous thing to do. And that to me is absolutely terrifying, because it means that they have been convinced in one way or another by these echo chambers and the places from which they've chosen to receive their information that this is their moment. And and they were willing to go there. They were willing. And don't forget, we haven't even spoken about, you know, the pipe bombs and the guns that were around that point. But this was an incredibly terrifying moment. It was, you know, some of the idiocy, I'm sure, was funny. But it was really, I think, absolutely terrifying because of how convinced these people were of their righteousness.
Well, also, we see storming of government buildings in other countries. And we cheer the people on, but those are ostensibly regimes that are brutalizing people and deserve to be overthrown. In this case, it was a fiction that was given to these people that the election was being stolen. And a very dangerous situation shows the power of media and the social networks. Gila.
The other thing that I was thinking, something else, we watched Trump's most recent video not long before we went on air. And hearing what he was saying and how it's feeding into the whole thing, and it was, if you're a follower of mine, if you believe in this, you know, my movement, it's where the allegiances are. And that is also terrifying to me. But we were watching, you know, we were watching the certification vote last week. We had C-SPAN on. And when I heard someone shout, "Stop the steal," into whichever chamber it was, because I don't remember what version of C-SPAN we were watching at that point, my heart stopped. It just stopped. And the idea that this is all right and correct and well and good, and that people planned so far ahead that someone was able to construct a gallows on the Capitol lawn. Yeah. Like, there was a literal gallows there in case they found Mike Pence, I think. They were ready to go.
Yeah.
They brought the lumber.
That is
incredible. I don't understand.
I really think I'm really curious if some of these phrases were focus group tested in the same way they were for the run-up to some of the campaigns, like Stop the Steal. And if anyone's looked into this in light of the Cambridge Analytica stuff and basically weaponized to do this kind of activity, because the kind of data and the way that was handled for some of the election stuff before, to be used post-election for an actual hostile takeover is actually where that kind of technology came from. But now it was actually used, deployed as a sort of psychological warfare technique. But those phrases seem too familiar and too much like the phrases we'd heard before that were all tested in that way.
Alex, I'd like to bring you in as far as the technological issue of domain names. And if you've noticed anything odd or interesting going on with new registrations, I don't know if you're able to see transfers. I know that Parler has been trying all sorts of ways to get back onto the internet, and the latest, I believe they're going to some company in Washington State called Epic.
Yeah, Epic.
Yeah, which would be an epic mistake for them, I think. The company Epic, if they accepted them, but I'm not sure if that's the kind of thing you would be able to detect. Have you seen any perhaps Parler related sites or anything that's of interest?
Oh yeah, I've got lots. We've been seeing lots of it, and that is something we can detect on our platform if we're watching a domain. Obviously, that's pretty easy to detect. They move their registrars. Epic is known to be a pretty I wouldn't say it's a bulletproof registrar, like a bulletproof host, but they are very protective of conservatives, and they're known to be sort of a haven for right wing outlets. You know, places that can't find a registrar elsewhere can go over to Epic. And look, they're a domain registrar like anybody else. And, you know, I have mixed feelings and mixed emotions about them giving haven to various sides. But even as abhorrent as some of the speech is, a lot of it, of what they do and what they allow to be registered with their registrar is protected by the First Amendment. These types of calls to insurrection and sedition certainly would not be, but some of the other sites and domains that they host probably are. Interestingly enough, the CEO of Epic, I've known for a while, his name is actually Rob Monster.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. The guy's name is Monster. Literally, his name is Monster. What world is this that we are in?
I don't know. I mean, you have to ask him the genealogy of that name.
No, is that his IRC handle or something? Or is that actually his... Is that, if I look for his birth certificate, I will find the Monster family?
Oh, I have emails from him, from Rob Monster.
You can make emails come from anybody. That's not convincing. I want to know, is Monster his... Okay, we can devote more time to this later.
Yeah.
Tell us what you found.
Well, we've also been watching, and in fact, if I pull up my active SSH session right now, but because I lost my internet connection, I have to reconnect. But we've been watching a lot of insurrection-related domain names as well, and there has been a massive amount of activity with respect to insurrection domain names. And not surprisingly, and one of the ones that I thought was very interesting just from a timing perspective, was that right around the time of the insurrection itself. In fact, we can look at this. I'm going to pull up the data right now.
You know, listeners can tell what keys you're pressing. The good listeners can. Different keys make different sounds. Just wanted to let you know that. It's a hacker show, so you should know that.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so.
I'll change your password. I would definitely change your password.
I have various passwords here, too. WeTheInsurrection.com was one that I thought was kind of interesting because that was registered on the 6th, 1 week ago from today. And this is Zulu time. So that's generally Greenwich Mean Time. So it would be plus 5 from here.
Zulu time? Creation,
Zulu time, yeah.
Do they use that because it sounds cool, or what's okay?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, that's another thing of which I'm not aware of the origin of Zulu term, but it's a pretty standard term.
Is it? All right.
Yeah. So and domain registrations are usually always in Zulu time. They've got the Z at the end of it, denoting it's Zulu. So that was at 22:22 Zulu time. So that would be about 5 p.m. or so on the 6th. And that was WeTheInsurrection.com. Now, I haven't seen much going on that particular site, but shortly thereafter, and I'm going to tell you right now how many domains we found there. So we've been seeing around 25 to sometimes more than that, sometimes 30, 40 insurrection-related domain names every single week. I'm sorry, every single day. Trumpsinsurrection.com, Trumpinsurrection.wiki, the 2021 insurrection, Insurrection 2021. I mean, it's Capitol Hill Insurrection.com.
How many did you say in a day you were seeing?
Usually around 20 to 30.
That's not that many. That could be some bored school kid trying to, squat on some domain names.
Well, relatively speaking, it is a lot. When you consider something like, the World Cup or the Super Bowl, where you would see maybe 5 to 10 domain name registered, on a very active day targeting that particular event, whether it's live streaming or merchandise or some kind of ticket related fraud, something like that. But as a worldwide event, 30 domains per day is actually pretty active for something like this. Here's another one that's strange that we picked up on the 10th of January. The insurrectionscream.com was registered then. And then there's Republican Insurrection that same day, Insurrection Wednesday. So there's been quite a lot of activity when it comes to insurrection-related domain names. Registered today was the insurrectionpresident.com.
Okay, that's what he's going to be known as. Well, what I'm really curious about, I don't know if you have the ability to do this, might be a good idea for the future, but how many of these registered domains turn into actual sites? I think that really tells the story.
Yeah, we can look at it. Yeah, that just requires, iterations, right? Looking at the data over and over and over again, because obviously looking at the data at the point of registration is a lot different because it's going to take a day, sometimes a week. So the longer you wait, the more domains you see actively being used for something or another. But then some of this, too, you have to remember is that you don't need a website to activate a domain name. They can have an MX record, sure, right, or a mail server record. So a lot of these domains can be used for sending mail. They're not necessarily going to be used for hosting content. It could be for getting back in touch with people, and perhaps this is a way to segue into what we saw with the Parler site and the leaks, because one of my hypotheses about the leaked data from Parler, or data that archivists were able to acquire from Parler, is that not only is law enforcement and private researchers, not as this data going to be useful to law enforcement and private researchers, but we also have to think that this data is also going to be useful to the extremists themselves, technically adept extremists themselves, who have now been deplatformed. They need a way to get back together. Well, all of that archived data is going to have all of their contact information.
But let's back up a second, because we haven't really talked about the story that you're talking about. 70 terabytes of Parler data was exposed and leaked. First of all, does anybody know how this happened? 70 terabytes, pretty much everything. I think it includes private messages, too. Am I right on that?
It goes back and forth. You know, I don't think anybody knows exactly what's in there unless you're hosting one of the, you know, or you have all of the data and you've looked in there. I've seen reports that say private messages are, and then they aren't in there. Deleted messages, deleted content does seem to be part of this leak, though.
Yeah, we can only go on what's been reported, and no one's really seen it or seen that many samples definitively. There's been stuff posted by some of the researchers behind it, and it's but alleged to have stuff that may have, like, even deleted posts, private posts, as well as media, specifically videos and pictures, including stuff like metadata. I do know that the index of the files is linked to torrents and other things that are already out there. And this basically was exfiltrated by exploiting a third-party API that I believe Twilio that was being used by Parler. And what happened was they stopped using the login credential system after a certain point when their shutdown from Amazon was announced. And this third-party API was able to be exploited so that a whole bunch of accounts could be created with the ability to sort of bypass creating login credentials.
Wow.
And so what I think the researchers did is create, like, a whole, like, swath of accounts or just a couple accounts. I'm not really sure exactly, but either they made a whole bunch of accounts to download it all, or they made lateral moves to get administrative access, or they were able to see the hierarchies of them, get administrative access to some of the accounts, and then exfiltrate the data either with sort of simulated accounts, like a whole ton of them, or through another method. But that's as much as I could glean from it.
Well, you know, I think we can say that this, having all this data, can be helpful to the people that were on the Parler system. But I think really it's going to be helpful for those people that want to investigate just what was going on there and how much it was tied to what happened a week ago. There's one message. I don't know if this came out as a result of the leak. I think it was actually known about before then, that was basically being passed around on Parler and not being taken care of by the Parler administrators. One of the reasons why they don't have a home right now. Said this: remember, all journalists are soft targets and are fair game in the coming revolution. Don't be afraid to take reporters down by any means necessary. And that's not an isolated comment. There are public radio stations right now that are locked down as a result of this. People are really, really afraid of what could be happening right now. And you saw, if you look online, you'll see there's a video of CNN reporters basically running for their lives outside the Capitol, having an angry mob surround them, destroying their equipment, saying all kinds of horrible things to them, all based on what Trump was saying about the media, CNN in particular. And it was disgusting to see this. It was so frightening. They destroyed all their equipment. And there was one guy that was trying to help them, shouting at people, saying, "This is not who we are." He's wrong. It's exactly who they are. You know, maybe it's not who he was, but it's exactly what that crowd was. And by saying that this is not who we are, and by the way, people, you need to get out of here or you're going to get hurt, it's kind of emphasizing the point that is who they are.
What really irks me about that is the way that serves them to do these crimes without a witness, without the public bearing witness. And the media, this is a crystal clear example of why the media is important. That's why they have to cover events. That's why they have to investigate and be given access so that they can tell people what's going on and you don't have violent coups happen in secret.
By the way, I just want to make this announcement. You're listening to Off the Hook on WBAI. At 8 o'clock, we are going into overtime, and that is accessible on our YouTube channel, which is channel 2600. So type youtube.com/channel2600. And the overtime piece will open up at 8 o'clock, and you can call us. That's a difference. You can call us. We can't take calls on the radio right now because we're in a remote location. We don't have access to the delay system and all that. But if you can call us, and the phone number to call us at 8 o'clock and beyond is 802-321-HACK. That's 802-321-4225. Alex, I believe you had something to add.
Sure. The one other point about this Parler data, and I know we had presupposed some knowledge on the part of the listeners here about this right wing outlet. It's been all over the news. But I think another great use for this particular data, if you think about it from a law enforcement perspective, is that because they collected so much information about the Parler users themselves and become a verified user, people had to, and this is really, you know, hilarious, people had to upload photos of their driver's licenses. So this is always leading to a, you know, a question of whether or not the Parler site was a honeypot to catch these types of personalities that were interested in things like insurrection to begin with. But if I were a Department of Justice attorney or working as an FBI agent investigating this, I would definitely be looking at that Parler data. You're probably going to get a copy of the data from Amazon Web Services, from AWS. It may not be the entirety of the data that was archived, however. So all of this data is going to be really useful. All of the email addresses, all of the other accounts, the contact data, the work addresses of people that were involved in this insurrection can now be the subject of additional surveillance, additional search warrants. So this Parler data leak could be a gift that really keeps on going when it comes to really keeps on giving, rather, when it comes to tracking and surveilling these types of right-wing extremist groups if the data is used properly.
Go ahead, Rob.
First of all, we have to give a shout to Donk NB, who is the hacker who first enabled all this, who basically found the ways to get in and extract this data from Parler. That's DONK_ENBY on Twitter.
Haven't you just put a big target on his head now for the whole right wing to come after him?
No, I put a big target on her head.
But
no,
I gave you a chance to get out of it too. Wow.
but she's been very open about what she's doing and how she's doing it. There's a very good story on Vice.com, which I encourage listeners to check out, where she was interviewed and went into the technical details. But also, there was something you mentioned before about the hardware being destroyed while people were in there. And that opens up something that nobody is talking about. And I think our listeners will be especially interested in. These people had physical access to all that equipment in the Capitol. They had access to computers. They were playing on the phones. People walked out with computers. And anyone in information security knows whatever countermeasures you have up, whatever firewalls you have up, physical access is basically you've lost, like all bets are off. And there were lots of posts and sentiments being posted around where people were looking at this and going, every piece of equipment in that building has got to be considered compromised now. You don't know what people were putting into USB drive slots. You don't know what people were adding or taking away. You know, one false phone charger cable with you know, hardware hidden in it to enable spying gets left on a desk somewhere, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And when After the insurrection, when everyone went back to work and they went back to, you know, certifying the election, everyone was back on their phones. Everyone was back on their computers.
Right.
God only knows what happened. It's a information security nightmare what happened. And yeah. There's been no mention of it.
I have seen mention of it, and I have seen people chastising Nancy Pelosi for why'd you leave your computer unlocked? You know, mm-hmm. when an angry mob is breaking through the doors, sometimes people don't have a chance to shut down cleanly, and her staff basically were hiding in another room. It's disgusting to think of these things. But in addition to the compromising of data or the possible malware, think of anything that could have been planted, you know, listening devices, keyboard loggers, also anybody who had half a brain and some interest in technology could have done something like this. And it would take a long time, if ever, to detect this. They were back on the floor a few hours later. There's no way they could have completely swept the place for listening devices or all sorts of other things in that short period of time. So, yeah, it's when you're compromised like that, it's extremely serious. And when you consider the stakes here, it's very, very disturbing.
There's really no time, though, to intervene with that. They were committed to continuing the business of our established form of government instead of entertaining this coup.
Can I just give a plug for a site that we put together? You might recall January 6th was the day when certain members of Congress decided they were going to try and overturn the election. That's in addition to the angry mob storming the Capitol. We put up a site where basically their information is posted. so that you can contact them, or you can visit their offices, or you can tweet at them, or you can call them, you can send them a fax. They're all listed on this site, and the site is called usa.wtf. Not kidding, that is our domain, usa.wtf. If you go there, you'll see a list of everybody who took part in this coup attempt that is part of the government. And that is a significant part of all this, because if you recall, there were basically very few cops that were there to protect the Capitol, less than on a normal day, in fact, and certainly no additional forces. And the reason for that was because it was set up that way. It was set up so that there would not be enough law enforcement to prevent the crowd from coming in. Trump put people in charge in the weeks beforehand for that very purpose. So this is part of a larger conspiracy. And what we did on this site was simply add those names and contact information so that people can do the right thing. And hopefully we make some changes so that this kind of thing doesn't happen again in the future. Folks, we are pretty much out of time, and we want people to join us on Overtime, which again will be on YouTube, youtube.com/channel2600, and the phone number to call us is 802-321-4225. I guess you can call us without listening, but it's best if you listen too, because that way you can hear the conversation. Folks, you all going to make it over there? We'll see you in a few minutes. Otherwise, for those who are listening to the radio, keep listening to WBAI. And we will be back in, 2 weeks? Yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks. So tune in. Tune in 2 weeks. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll see you on Channel 2600 on YouTube at 8 o'clock. We'll see you on BAI in 2 weeks. Good night.
Tune in to Folk Radio this Thursday, January 14th at 10 p.m. and hear
every kind of music you ever wanted to hear. We've got folk songs.
Come, you ladies and you gentlemen, and listen to my song.
Blues.
The first time I met the blues, even though I was walking down through the woods.
Old-time country music.
All around this old world, trouble on my mind.
Jug bands.
You quit me, pretty mama, cause you couldn't be my boss. But a rolling stone don't gather no moss. You may leave, but this'll bring you back.
But wait, there's more. As a special bonus for everyone who tunes into Folk Radio this Thursday, January 14th at 10 p.m. on WBAI or WBAI.org, we've even got Cajun music.
This is Attorney Michael Smith from Law & Disorder Radio. Sunday, this coming Sunday, January 17th at 6 p.m., Heidi Boghossian and I will be bringing you a special two-hour program on our founder, Attorney Michael Ratner, on his long-awaited memoir, Moving the Bar, My Life as a Radical Lawyer. We hear from nearly 20 people who knew and worked with Michael. Michael was the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights and the outstanding human rights lawyer of his generation. Tune in. Learn about his legal battles from the Attica prison uprising to his representation of Julian Assange. You'll be able to order his book. We hope you'll be listening. It'll be a good way to start off the new year. That'll be on Sunday, January 17th at 6 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM or live stream it at WBAI.org.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at the City College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, and this is Exploration. Every week in Exploration, we discuss the fascinating world of science and its impact on society. Well, today, leading off, we're going to summarize some of the big stories in science and politics. The big story, of course, revolves around the coronavirus vaccine. So far, so good. Millions of people have been vaccinated already with minimal side effects. There have been some instances, but not enough to alter the trajectory of the vaccine. However, it also raises questions about how long does this immunity last, and are there new strains of the virus which may be resistant to the vaccine. Not just the UK version, which is getting a lot of attention, but there's a new mutation, a new variation coming out of South Africa, which may, just may, be able to evade the vaccine. And this is causing a tremendous shiver to go through scientific circles as we try to figure out whether or not a new strain of the virus is emerging out of South Africa, which is immune to the vaccine. Also, on the political front, we have to say a few things about Iran. Well, as you know, President Donald Trump put a hold on the treaty with Iran. The future is now up in the air. The Iranian government has stated that it has no restrictions on where it will go with regards to making an atomic bomb. And to make good on its threat, it has announced that 20% enrichment is the new target. And the question is 20% enrichment sufficient to develop an atomic bomb? And for that matter, if it isn't, then how long will it take to go from 20% to 90% bomb-grade material? So what are the pros and cons of the situation with regards to Iran? And also dark matter is in the news. It turns out that, well, most astronomers believe that dark matter is a new form of matter that we don't see here on the planet Earth. However, there's a renegade theory that says that no, our models are wrong. Our theory is wrong. Gravity does not obey the laws of Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein. And they cite new materials, new data that seem to indicate that, well, maybe it's true. So we'll have to, again, look at the question of why dark matter? And also, speaking about the universe, we know that the rovers on Mars are quite reliable. They've been able to hobble their way across tremendous deserts and craters, but they're extremely slow and they're quite clumsy and they can't navigate over, for example, the ice caps or rocky terrain. Why not have robot dogs? Dogs that can travel as fast as a human can run. Think about that. Artificial intelligence has now reached the point where we can create robotic dogs that, for the most part, can do what dogs can do. And so the question is, will robotic dogs eventually scan and begin the process of colonizing the red planet? And now let's say a few things about inner space as well. You know, common sense tells us that relatives tend to look alike. If you don't believe me, just look at your own family tree, brothers and sisters and cousins. It's common sense. But the question is, why? Are there genes which can show this? Well, there's a new study being done to isolate the relationship between facial features and genes by scanning 8,000 individuals and using advanced computer programs to isolate where and how DNA may influence our face and what we look like. This, of course, has enormous implications, medical implications, also implications for crime detection, and then it also raises ethical questions. What happens if we can modify those genes to change the way we look? Will everyone want to have children that look like movie stars? Well, you have to think about that. Well, let's just jump right into some of the top stories of the past week. The lead story today is that, well, yes, there are some hiccups, and it's happening much slower than expected, but vaccinations are now being given out. And, of course, there's all these ethical questions about who gets the vaccine first, but it's nothing short of a miracle that in just the span of several months, we were able to go from the laboratory into the field with a vaccine that is 95% effective. However, there are lots of questions involved. First, we know that the seasonal flu, well, every year we have to get a new vaccine for the seasonal flu because it mutates. In fact, mutates quite rapidly, and that's why we have seasonal flu vaccination. Well, measles, on the other hand, does not mutate so rapidly. And so once you're inoculated for measles, it stays with you for the rest of your life. So the big question that a lot of people is asking are, what about COVID-19? How long does the vaccine work for? Well, the short answer is, we don't know. We've only had about 3 months worth of data concerning the first individuals ever to be vaccinated. So no one really knows. All we know is that the rate of mutation of the virus is much slower than the rate of mutation of seasonal flu. So there are some indications that perhaps the vaccine will be better than the seasonal flu vaccine. But of course, that's just a hope. Now, the real danger is emerging from South Africa. First of all, the headlines blared the fact that a new mutation has surfaced in the United Kingdom, which is perhaps 70% more infectious than the standard coronavirus. Well, scientists analyzed that new virus and they realized that it's probably vulnerable to the vaccine that we have today. However, and this is now sending shivers up the spines of many a doctor, And that is, there's yet another new mutation coming out of South Africa, which actually may be, who knows, invulnerable to the vaccine. Now, how do we know that? Well, it turns out that the way in which the virus enters your lung cells is by attaching one of its spikes on the surface onto your cells and injects its genetic material into your cell. These are called spike proteins. You've seen images of the virus. It looks like spikes coming out of a ball. These are called spike proteins, and they're like the key that then hits and inserts itself into the lock guarding a cell. The protein then turns the key, opening up the cell for infection. It turns out that this new virus coming out of South Africa has many mutations in the spike protein. Now, that doesn't mean that it'll evade the vaccine. It just means that if it has the correct mutations, and there are quite a few of them in this new strain, perhaps some of those mutations will evade the vaccine. Because you see, that's what happens when the virus hits your cell. The lock is penetrated by the key. But it turns out that with this new variation coming out of South Africa, it has a different key, more mutations in that key, meaning more ways in which it may be able to gain entrance to your cell and evade the vaccine, which retards the cells, retards the virus's ability to insert the key into the lock. Well, the short story, the short version of all this is that we're waiting to see whether or not this new virus is as deadly as some people fear it might be. And speaking about fears, yet another fear is emerging in the Middle East, where we have the bomb potentially proliferating to some of the most volatile regions, specifically Iran. It turns out that, well, under President Barack Obama, a treaty was negotiated. The Iranians stopped its enrichment program. But then President Donald Trump pulled out of the treaty, and the Iranians just announced that they're going to go for 20% enrichment. Now, let me explain. In order to get bomb-grade uranium, you have to have U-235, which is a type of uranium which is quite rare. Most uranium, like found in ore, is U-238. So you have to separate the useless U-238 from the volatile U-235, which is the stuff of atomic bombs. How do you do that? Well, first of all, you purify uranium ore, and then you make it into a gas, uranium hexafluoride, and then you spin the gas in an ultracentrifuge. In the ultracentrifuge, the heavier isotopes go to the bottom, and the lighter isotopes go to the top. And then you can just remove the top layer. The top layer has enriched U-235 because it is lighter than U-238. And then you repeat this process over and over and over again until you hit 90% enrichment, meaning 90% U-235, 10% U-238. That is bomb-grade uranium. And how much bomb-grade uranium is necessary to wipe out Hiroshima? About the size of your fist. About 20 pounds of this very heavy metal is sufficient to flatten a modern city. And then the question is, can the Iranians then build an atomic bomb? Well, at the present time, the answer is no. But then the next question is, how long will it take to break out? Let's say that they announce that 20% is not enough and they're going to go for 90%. How long will it take for them to reach 90% enrichment? Well, the short answer is we don't know. They have plenty of ultracentrifuges ready to go if they get the go-ahead. Maybe a year. Nobody knows for sure because we don't know the state, really, of their enrichment process. Some of the enrichment facilities are, in fact, secret. And so who knows how long it will take for them to reach breakout. But there's also another danger, not just breakout within a year, But let's go into the future, 10, 15 years into the future, after a hypothetical treaty is expired.